Syria. This softer approach by Iran and Russia was not until months ago, as it is today, when the Russians and Iranians recorded firmness regarding any Turkish operation of the above-mentioned type. In light of the semi-acceptance of Moscow and Tehran to the Turkish arguments and the trio contacts entering the stage of talking about the limits of the incursion and the political costs required to meet it, Kurdish separatists under fire in this following report.
Under the surface of the calm that the Syrian battlefield experienced throughout the previous months, many pressuring factors were working on more than one active side of the Astana talks, some of which seem to have reached the moment of explosion today. This applies, for example, to the air attacks carried out by Turkey against the Syrian Democratic Forces in northern Syria under the title of Operation Claw Sword, and hinting at the approaching moment of the ground operation during which the Turkish army will control more bordering Syrian land. This step has always been a point of discussion throughout the past period, especially in the Astana round of talks held last June and then again last week on November 23, which took place 2 days before the Turkish bombing of the SDF sites in full view of the Russian and American forces deployed in the region. And while Russia is still on its declared position rejecting the Turkish ground move, with the emergence of noticeable changes in the field in terms of allowing Turkish planes to penetrate Russian airspace inside Syria, Iran these days is showing greater understanding of this move. For Russia, the Russian-Turkish cooperation has reached its climax in recent months with the intensification of the Russian special operation in Ukraine, as Russia realizes that Turkey today is one of its main crossings to the world in light of the ongoing Western blockade on the former. As for Iran, which is dealing today with Western-instigated internal unrest, it accuses the Kurdish opposition party stationed in the Kurdistan region of northern Iraq of being responsible for sending, training, and equipping armed groups to carry out terrorist acts on Iran's soil. Iran responded quickly to this threat by targeting the sites of these parties, also hinting at the possibility of launching a ground military operation to remove them from its borders with Iraq. Hence, Turkish diplomats argue in front of their Iranian counterparts in the context of the formation of the new Iranian position towards the armed Kurdish parties, comparing it with the previous and current Turkish position, to say that their country's past and expected military operations in Syria are legitimate and justified. Met by this argument, Iranian officials show understanding of Turkish security concerns, but they did urge their Turkish counterparts to cooperate with the Syrian government to ensure the deployment of the Syrian army on the borders between the two countries in order to prevent Kurdish military operations inside Turkish territory. This is exactly what Tehran sought with Baghdad, the first fruits of which were evident in the Iraqi government's announcement of the deployment of its forces on the borders between Iran and the Iraqi Kurdistan region. Thus, it appears that the interest of the three guarantor countries of the Astana talks converges with hostility to the Kurdish separatist forces in northern Syria.
Now, to discuss this issue with us from Atlanta, Georgia, is Mr. Aqil Hananu, political commentator. Thank you very much for being with us, Mr. Aqil. Now, what made the three guarantors of the Astana talks intersect in their hostility to the Kurdish separatist forces in northern Syria?
I think this is the beginning of the end for the hostility going on in Syria. I think this is a message to the American more than the Kurds. The Kurds are tools used by the American. We never heard about the American caring about the Kurds or Syria or anybody before now. And the continuous support of the American to the Kurds for their aggression, for their stealing of the oils and the wheats of Syria. And then now the accusation of the bombing in Istanbul caused all this. At the same time in Iran, the Kurds in Iran also start moving, trying to repeat the story of Syria, which consolidated the three alliance between Turkey, Iran, and Russia. And I guarantee you, what's going on in the northern part of Syria right now, it's happening with the complete approval of the Syrian government. Because at one point, the Turks asked the Syrian Arab Army to control the Kurds, and the Syrian government refused to participate in any war over there as long as the occupation forces of Turkey remaining there. So that forced the hand of Turkey to come and clear the area and as a sign of beginning to go to normalization between Syria and Turkey.
Well, Msaqil, under the surface of the calm that the Syrian battlefield has experienced, especially throughout the previous months, many pressure factors were working on more than one active party in the file of the Kurdish separatists, some of which seem to have reached a moment of explosion, as you mentioned when you started. However, wouldn't that just allow a reignition of dormant terrorist organizations in Syria, like, for example, al-Nusra or Daesh, in the event that Turkey actually gets inside of the Syrian territory?
Well, the Turkish are already inside the Syrian territories, and the Turkish are part of the protectors of Daesh and Nusra. Daesh and al-Nusra, they are not independent organizations where they could move as they wish. They wait for instruction, and they act on those instructions from their masters. So I don't think there will be any movement from Daesh or al-Nusra at this time, because the Turkish don't want to create another battle. They want to finish from the Kurd separatists in Syria, and then they will focus on al-Nusra and Daesh. And that battle is coming. It's not something is going to be put off for a long time. Once the Kurds get contained, the next target will be Idlib, where al-Nusra is based.
But what's the guarantee that the Kurds will be contained? I mean, we all watched 2 weeks ago the Istiklal bombing in the heart of Istanbul, and we still don't have answers if actually the Kurds had a hand in it or not. But what is the guarantee for Turkey that the Kurds of Syria will be contained?
Well, that's the guarantee. It's going to come from the United States. When you cut off the supply and the support of the American to the Kurds, they have no way but to go back to the bases and try to consolidate whatever problem they have with the Syrian government. I mean, the Russian has suggested that the Syrian army protect the border and for the Kurds to withdraw. But the Kurds refuse, and that's also according to the instruction they received from the American. So we are waiting to see, and I think those people are not going to be settled with peace negotiation, because any peace negotiation with them will give them legitimacy, which they should not have, because they do not have it. So the guarantee is going to come from their master, mm-hmm. and what I see with the American are trying to position themselves to clear the area in the Middle East from any hostility so they could focus on China and Russia.
Well, we did see that Russia is still on its declared position, rejecting any Turkish incursion into Syria. But we did see some noticeable changes. For example, the Russians are now allowing the Turks to use the airspace that they protect over Syrian territory. And we did see also Iran these days showing greater understanding of any possible incursion by the Turks. Might we see a joint Turkish-Iranian attack against Kurdish pockets, both in northern Iraq and in northern Syria?
In Iraq, for Iran, I do anticipate some kind of movement, unless the Iraqi government comes and control the area there. But I do not anticipate to see any Iranian armed forces in Syria. Syrian army are capable, and the Syrian army has the same goal as the allies, Russia and Iran, in Syria. And the incursion of the Turkish into the space protected by Russia has been approved by the Syrian government for the goal of that intervention to end the separatist Kurds' presence in the northern part. So I don't see any military presence of the Iranian in Syria, be it airspace or ground.
Well, in less than a minute, can you tell me what the position of the Syrian government will be from all of that we mentioned?
Well, the Syrian government wants to liberate all its property and land. And that's the goal. Who does it doesn't matter. But whoever left standing after this, the Syrian army will take care of it. We will spread our authority over all the Syrian land. And listen, before all this Arab Spring or the revolution, democracy, none of Turkey or Iran had any problem with any Kurds or anybody, because the Syrian army was controlling their land. The Iraqi army was controlling their land. But when the American came with the presenting democracy and freedom as they see it into this part of the world, chaos erupted, and here we are now.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mr. Aqil Hanan, a political commentator, joining us from Atlanta, Georgia, to talk about how the separatist Kurds, both in Syria and Iraq, will see the end of these days to come, especially at the beginning of next year. Thank you very much for being with us, and thank you for being always part of our reports of telling the truth. Sanction us no matter how you see possible. We will never cease telling the truth. I'll see you again next week. Salam alaikum.
The first methodology that the Quran uses is to talk to the emotional side of the human being.
Ya ayyuhal ladhina amanu, O you who believe, ista'inu bis-sabri was-salah.
And we have set forth for mankind in this Quran full of examples.
Minbar, Minbar, a lecture on Islamic issues.
Islam is a way of life, a complete way. It's a complete way.
Dear audience of IRIB English Radio, now it's time to listen to a short speech by Sayyid Asad Jafari.
Cultivating an Islamic identity has been our ongoing topic. It's a massive topic. It's a massive undertaking. So tonight, I want to look at God. It's important to know that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has attributes, all of you know, that are connected to His essence. And inshallah, later on in the lecture, I'll present to you a very beautiful verse that really kind of captures this discussion of God's essence and God's sifat qualities. Before that, however, you also, the ulama now have broken down the categories or the sifat into different categories. Right? Fi'liya, dhatiya, all of that, inshallah. One beautiful breakdown of these qualities is the Jamali versus Jalali aspect of God. Now, before that, there are some individuals who are beauty-oriented by nature. In fact, I would argue that we are all innately beauty-oriented. If we're driving home, we see a nice sunset, we might pull over and grab a picture. If we go, let's say, for example, to the mountains, let's say, for example, and we stop and we want to have like a lake view house, for example, or a cottage, again, we'll enjoy the idea that it's very serene. We'll sit there and not say anything and embrace that beauty. People will stop and smell the roses, the waterfalls that they love. There's selfies everywhere. And there are those that focus on the beautiful qualities of God. They understand Him to be forgiving. Understand Him to be merciful. All they see everywhere they look are the qualities and the blessings of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Allahumma ma bina min ni'matin faminik. Everything I have is from You. Everything I see is from You. In the process now, because they are now focusing on the jamal of Allah, the beauty of Allah, they end up loving Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay, so in the process now they fall in love with Allah because all they see are rainbows. There are people who are always positive. It's annoying sometimes, it really is. How can you be so positive? Somehow they find some sort of goodness, let's say, in sometimes the most difficult situations. They never stop saying Alhamdulillah. They say that, you know, Nabi Isa was with his disciples walking by a dead corpse of an animal. It's been there for a couple of days now. There's a nasty smell to it. There's maggots, there's flies, blah, 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 this and that. It's a very hideous sight. Disciple says, you know, look how disgusting this is. And Nabi Isa looks at the animal and says, look how straight his teeth are. It's the focus, right? It's what you see. There are people who focus only on the Jamal of Allah. Then there are those who focus on the Jalal of Allah. Meaning what? The power of Allah. The majestic power of Allah, the fear of Allah. And their entire focus is, let's make sure I don't disappoint Allah, I don't anger Allah, I don't do anything to let Him down, make sure I follow everything to a T, because if I anger Allah, then there's a lot of problems I have. So everything now, everything I do, everything I worship, how I worship, is all based on the fact, don't anger Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. He's powerful. And while the first group now focuses on the beauty, and that result in the love of Allah, the second group focuses on Jalal, the power of Allah, and ends up fearing Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. Okay? So far so good? Jalal? Yes. Okay. Now both of them, and by the way, this is in Imam Khomeini's Adab al-Salat, opening couple of chapters of chapter 5, chapter 6, where he says that khushu, humbleness you need to even enter the realm of Salat, can come from both of these aspects. Meaning what? You can be humbled by both the love of Allah and by the fear of Allah. Let me explain. I'll give you examples. So for example, let's say for example, those of you who are Jamali, mashallah, you're a half glass full person. How does that humble you? I'll take my elders back to the time where you were a newlywed, mashallah. Remember that time? Just got married, first 2 weeks. That excitement you have. Everything now is an event. Breakfast is an event. Waking up is an event. Combing your hair is an event. You come downstairs ready. You can't wait. You can hear her walking up the stairs, coming downstairs. You stand up straight. You make sure, you know, you look good. Everything's all right. She's coming downstairs. Adia, oh my God. Your heart is beating. Your palms are sweaty. Right? You're in love. I mean, this is my newlywed. This is my bride. This is my husband. He's coming from work now. He should be here. You're looking outside the door. 502, 505, 510. You hear the keys ruffling. He's here. Open the door. Assalamu alaikum. How was your day? Good. Please come. Long time ago, right? If he's leaving, let's say for example, you'll walk him to the door. Okay, khulafis, have a good day. And then you'll sit there by the door as he drives away, and you'll wave goodbye. And as he makes that turn, now you'll close the door. Okay, he's gone. That's it. Now he says, "I'm leaving. Why are you still here? Why haven't you left yet? You said you're going 5 minutes ago." Hi. What happened? 20 years? No idea. But that love made you humble. You want to make sure nothing. Absolutely no. I don't want to do anything to upset the one that I love. And so you have this anxiety in a very good way that, okay, you know, make sure you set up right, this and that. You know that she loves this and loves that. Bring that home, for example, right? She loves a certain coffee, let's say, for example. One cream, two sugars, no cream, no sugar, blah, 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 this and that. Okay, she loves her Boston cream donuts. Bring home Boston cream donuts. Make sure, here you go, I thought about you. That all humbles you, brings you down. There's no pride. If she says, "Look, I'm really craving Baskin Robbins this flavor," because, "Oh, it doesn't matter. You go get it yourself." No, you're in love. Yeah, absolutely. That beauty humbles you. What about Jalal? Again, example. You're applying for a major corporation. This is your dream job. And you're almost there. You've been through one interview and two interviews. The final step in getting your job is to meet the CEO. 10 o'clock now, 10 a.m. tomorrow morning, you have your interview. And if you nail this now, you got the job. Your dream job. I'm set for life if I get this job. And you're nervous. Absolutely. It's an element of fear. Sure there is. It's an authority figure inside that boardroom. And so 9:30 you arrive now. You check in. Have a seat. We'll call you when it's ready. 9:40, 9:45 hits. Your heart is racing. Your palms. Exact same symptoms as you had with your newlywed bride. That was love, this is fear. Both of them humble you. They humble you. Now Imam Khomeini goes one step further. He says that sometimes the Jamal becomes a Jalal becomes a Jamal. Again, I'll explain. They tell these stories in Qum of Layla and Majnoon. You've heard these stories, I'm sure. Layla was a girl, and Majnoon, the actual translation of Majnoon is that he was crazy in love with her. So they call him Majnoon. He was mad. He was, you know, in his love for him, he was a divana. He's completely out of... I remember my Farsi teacher told me this one story, and it stuck to me. It was beautiful. Layla, they say, was serving food one day. It's a very famous story. Serving food one day, I don't know, somewhere, let's say, for example, in a public meal. And so, you know, Majnoon found out that Layla's downtown serving food. And wherever Layla is, I have to be there. I don't want to put thoughts in my young guys' heads. Wallahi. Please. Understand the message. So he grabs a plate. He waits in line. He waits in line. Now, the thing is, no matter how much Majnun tries to show his love to Layla, she never, ever accepts it. In fact, she's quite rude. She rejects it flat out. So now everyone knows, everyone in town knows that this guy is, you know, what is it about her? She's obviously telling you, look, I'm not interested, but no. So wherever she is, he shows up. And everyone's like, look, he's in line holding a plate. He gets closer and closer. Now his heart's pounding. It's time for him now to get the food. Now she's there, he's there. She sees it's him. She grabs his plate and smashes it on the ground. What does he do? He smiles. He blushes. Everyone sees, the whole town sees. He walked away. He says, I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. I knew it. Are you crazy? Are you all right? She broke your plate. He said, yes, but she broke my plate. Of everyone's plate to break, she chose my plate to break. What was a Jalali act? He saw as a Jamali act. What was Jalal to everybody else? The anger of Layla, the smashing, the crash sound. He thought Jamal beautiful.
You're listening to Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran. This program entitled Minbar. Our email address is englishradio@irib.ir.
Rahi. كريم عظيم عليم حليم حكيم متين غفور شكور ودود قيوم رؤوف صبور مجيد صلي على محمد وآل محمد يا مؤمنين صلوا عليه.
Join us in this journey. IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
IRIB English Radio presents
Viewpoints.
The presence of different scholars.
And God said, Let there be light, and there was light.
The Creator made Adam in his image, then placed the world in his care. May you walk alongside the Creator in righteousness.
God of Abraham, take my child into thy hands, that he may live to thy service.
God has spoken to us before, through Abraham, Noah, Moses, and through Jesus Christ. Why should we be so surprised that God speaks to us now through Muhammad?
Viewpoint,
a critique of movies with religious themes on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, in the name of God, welcome to another edition of the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio with me, Muhammad Jawad, hosting this program, and my guest speakers in the studio, Sayyid Abdullah. Assalamu alaikum and welcome to the program.
Wa alaikum assalam wa rahmatullah, and it's always a pleasure being here.
You're welcome. The pleasure is always ours. And Sister Asma, thank you very much for coming to the studio and welcome.
Thank you very much for inviting me.
Welcome.
Happy to be here.
We are delighted to have both of you again to the in the studio criticizing the movie Father Stu that we have started, in fact, from a previous episode onwards. This is a movie produced in 2022, directed by Rosalind Ross. Starring good actors and actresses from Hollywood, such as Mark Wahlberg and Mel Gibson. Before me asking you a question regarding this movie, let's take a listen to a short part of this movie, Father Stu, and then we'll be back. Don't go away.
Hi, Stuart. How you been?
Give me the keys. I got an audition. I'll be late.
Audition? For what?
A movie. None of your business.
Seeing as you're trying to steal my truck to get there, I figure it
well,
is.
Once I get my check from the supermarket, I'll spring my ride and give yours back.
I reckon it's a few months' worth of cleanups on aisle four to pay off a DUI impound. That is the offense.
Well, if you send half what you spend on whiskey to your wife, you might still have a marriage.
Back to the program Viewpoint on RIB English Radio. We are trying to criticize the movie Father Stu, produced in 2022, directed by Rosalind Ross. Sister Asma, you know, there is a conversation between a dad and his son. Basically, we are talking about Stuart Long and his dad, Mel Gibson, in the movie, which is very rude. Of course, I don't want to just, talk about or bring in every part or dialogue that happened between the two.
Yes.
Between,
the father and
Stuart
the son.
And, yes, his father. But we're just going to focus on a few dialogues which are there in the movie that I find very interesting,
mm-hmm.
especially of, Stuart and his dad and Stuart and the rector of the church.
Yes.
Whatever. But I just wanted to go straight to my question regarding the, let's say, impoliteness
mm-hmm.
Or impolite nature of the dialogue or the conversation between a son and his father. And there are lots of obscene words, so much so that you get somehow a little bit shocked that you can't
yes.
watch this movie, for example, along with your kids or, your close
with
relatives.
Company.
Yes. Why is this familial relationship in the West like this? Not at all comparable to Muslim countries when I compare it,
mm-hmm.
to, for example, my relationship with my dad, or I'm sure your relationship to your dad or your
exactly.
parents, it wouldn't be something like this. I mean, the nature would be somehow different. It's based on somehow mutual respect.
Exactly,
all right?
Yes.
And most often the respect goes to the elderly
mm-hmm.
in this regard,
yes.
So we have so much respect for our parents.
Mm-hmm.
Why is it not like this in the other parts of the world?
Well, firstly, I would say, even in our societies nowadays, everything is starting to change in a drastic way that even now, when you look at families, you would say, oh my God, this is not what we used to have. So I guess after a time when societies start to have changes or there are some, revolutionary things happen in the behavioral system of families and each single person, each individual. So I guess they think this is a way of getting so much friendly with their children, or something that at first might look very interesting to have no curtains between you and your children. But little by little, as time goes by, you would understand that it would have some really dangerous effects in the family. Because that much of friendship between a father and a son, or a mother with her daughter, would cause some damages to their character. They would no longer have borders. They would no longer have limitations in their personalities. So they would be like what we're seeing nowadays, some rude, impolite people who do not follow manners. Mm-hmm. Mannerism is a very important thing. I guess that decorum that we have in literature, yes, could be applied everywhere.
What
everyone
is that?
That is, you have to notice what context is used with which frame. So you should consider this fact, that when you're talking to your dad, it's a different thing from talking to your parent, even to your friends or even siblings. So you should watch your words, or have some manners, or be in some limitations. That's as a rule. I think it's a rule and everybody should follow that. But as I told you, time would change, new generations come with new ideas, and there's no control over that, I guess.
I see. Regarding the same question, Sayed, it's why are we worlds apart? Like, when I'm comparing, like, yeah, Muslim countries, mm-hmm, the Muslim families with non-Muslim families, they're not at all comparable.
Look, if you're talking about parenting, because in Islam emphasizes so much so on parenting that he kept Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala, he attached his anger and his pleasure to the parents. Mm-hmm. If your father is happy with you, Allah is happy. If your father is upset, Allah is upset. Same thing with your mother. So Allah puts so much emphasis on us as children to respect our parents that even my heaven and hell depending on them. And Allah even went a step further. He said, even if your parents are bad people,
yes,
and they do
you
whatever they want
to
do,
you still need to respect
you
them.
You still need to respect them.
Yes.
There's only one condition that you do not need to listen to your parents, is that when they ask you to commit blasphemy towards God, he says,
yes,
do not listen to them. But even in that case, be nice to them.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't come to them, you tell them, you were this, you were that, you point fingers at them because they are non-Muslims or non-believers. He says, no, you have to use the utmost respect for them. He says, even uf in the Quran says, mm-hmm, use the word uf. Uf is not a word.
Yeah.
It's just air that you blow out of expression,
yeah,
of anger or annoyance that you make. So you go, uf, right?
Yeah.
Allah says, even that do not do. So most Muslim family, if not all Muslim family, at least the kids are brought up with this mentality. So we see that we have more respect to our parents.
Yes.
Unlike the West, where the notion of respecting one's parents does not even exist in the Bible or the Torah or the Old Testament, the New Testament, does not exist.
Yeah.
Such a notion.
Even
so, they grow on that and there's nothing there. To top of that, we had like so many systems, like you had the Marxist and you had the communists and you have all these, the socialists. All these movements, they were targeting the family itself.
Mm-hmm.
They wanted to break that hierarchy in the family.
Right.
Your father, your mother means nothing. They are just workers just like you and I.
Mm-hmm.
So they want to break the family. And the Hollywood media, the Hollywood mechanism, it's been working for years, at least 25 years now, trying to demolish the essence of a family,
mm-hmm,
the father role and the mother role.
I see.
And they even the cartoons, that if you've seen cartoons, I've seen a lot of cartoons in my time.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they do. They make the kids, like the sister said, friendly, but actually they're not aiming for friendliness. They're aiming for breaking that hierarchy. For
that
example,
tie.
If you watch The Simpsons like is one of the most watched cartoons in history.
Yeah.
Right? And in The Simpsons, Bart always refers to his father as Homer. He calls him Homer.
Yeah.
He doesn't call him Dad. There are times where he calls him Dad,
yeah,
but he always refers to him as Homer.
Yeah.
He takes that. As a child, when you watch such cartoons,
this is opposite
of
education. This is miseducation.
It's not a miseducation. It's a targeted education.
Yeah. I know. Purposeful one.
Yeah, it's a very purposeful one. So, like I said, so there are systems into play that deliberately trying to break that family.
Mm-hmm.
So like the sister said, it's moving rapidly. It's coming to us. It's happening to us now. And we can see that happening with our kids as well. That,
yeah,
this notion of disrespecting your parents is starting to become a very rapid thing that's happening in the Muslim communities. But it's still, having said that, even with our kids, when they get bad or they become bad, they don't get as bad as these guys, like you see in the movie, where he looks at his father as like not even a second-class citizen, like as someone that he really hates and doesn't like. He curses him, he swears at him, he kicks him out of the house, and we don't do that. I mean, I could be bad with my father, but I would not get to that extent. So that tells you that they reached a stage where the parents, they are absolutely total strangers to them. They mean nothing to them.
Sometimes
that he has the ability to.
Sometimes they call each other by the first name.
Yeah.
This is shows actually how their relationship, in fact, is directed at, you know?
Yeah.
Okay, I wanted to ask you a very important question, but we have to wait after a break. Stay with us.
Today, the church joyfully welcomes those who will be received into the order of catechumens. In the months to come, they will be preparing their initiation into Christian faith by baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist.
Back to the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We are trying to criticize the movie Father Stu, produced in 2022, directed by Rosaline Ross. Sayyid Abdullah, just before the break, I wanted to ask you a question, a very important one, about one of the main principles of Christianity, which is catechumen, right? Basically, it's a combination of baptism, confirmation, and Eucharist. All of these combined into one, as this term, in fact, suggests. Why is it necessary to be initiating the Christian faith? I mean, like, do you need, like, baptism to be, like, called a Christian, for example, a Catholic?
With all religions, they all have a ceremonial kind of beginning.
Rituals.
Rituals, in a way or another. So if you look at them, it doesn't matter what. Sometimes even non-Brahmic religions, they also have that. If you look at Buddhism or if you look at Hinduism, they also have these rituals where you get anointed.
It's part of the tradition.
Yes, part of the tradition.
There must be an introduction.
But yeah, it's like they have this, even with Islam as well, in order for you to become a Muslim.
Like a homecoming ritual.
Exactly.
Yeah. So in Islam, we don't have this ceremony, but at least there's initiation. Take the Shahada. So the Shahada is like the first thing you do. You say, Ashhadu an la ilaha illallah, Ashhadu anna Muhammad Rasulullah.
And we also have the ghusl, right?
And,
ghusl.
Well, yeah, ghusl, but that's because it's an Islamic obligation, because part of the ceremony.
Yeah, true.
So we also have that initiation part where you state your Shahada and then you're on your way. So I think Christianity came up with that notion as well of you have to be baptized, you have to be fed certain things, you have to be closed in a certain way.
Certain steps you have to take before entering the club.
Exactly. So they come up with these things as well to make it more official. That if you, even you could be a Christian, but if you're not baptized, they look at you differently as well. So baptism is like, it's a very important part of their faith that needs to be done. So you have a lot of Christians, if you ask them, are you baptized? They say, no. If I could make this into an example in Muslim world that we can understand, as well, a circumcision, right? Yeah, it's compulsory. You need to be circumcised, right? So a lot of people, for example, yeah, I'm a Muslim, but I'm not circumcised. We say, okay, there's something wrong there. You know what I mean?
Jewish people also have it, right?
Jewish, they also have to get circumcised as well.
True.
So we say, you know, there's something wrong in this picture. So the same thing with baptism for a Christian. You need to get baptized. Otherwise, you're not fully Christian yet. Or those who are dedicated or those who are Christian to the core, they will look at you with a, you know, a slightly a downward look. They're like, you're not worthy.
Is it important in Protestant as well?
It is. They need to get baptized.
I see. Yeah. Okay. Thank you very much, Sayyid Abdullah and Sister Asma, for your nice contribution to the program Viewpoint on IRIB English Radio. We try to criticize the movie Father Stu, produced in 2022, directed by Rosalind Ross. Of course, we haven't finished it yet, and hopefully we are going to do so in the upcoming episodes. Thank you very much for listening to us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullah wa barakatuh.
The eight-year defense of Iranian combatants.
A senior Iranian lawmaker has said,
contrary to Washington's claims, America's
President Raisi has emphasized that
U.S. sanctions have failed to extract concessions from Tehran.
Iran Today.
For thousands of years, the merchants, voyagers, and caravans traveling on the Silk Road used Iran or ancient Persia as a transit hub. The country played a significant role in transporting commodities from west to east and vice versa. Ancient Persia, with its numerous bazaars and caravanserais, was one of the main trade stations along the ancient Silk Road due to its geopolitical position. In recent times, this huge capacity, nonetheless, became stagnant due to war, political conflicts and sanctions, and consequently lack of infrastructure. However, the current international conditions have presented Iran with a terrific opportunity to play a significant role in the broader implementation of the International North-South Transport Corridor and the Road and Belt Project, and hence transform into a regional trade hub by developing its transit infrastructure. Given the lower costs and shorter time of trade by using its transit corridors, Iran can become the main trade link between Asia and Europe once again, and in the process effectively neutralize the US attempts to isolate the Islamic Republic from the global economy. In fact, Iran's transit potential is proving so attractive that it is among the driving forces behind recent regional diplomacy. Experts believe that economic interdependencies provided by such regional cooperation can establish a measure of rationality and efficiency and perhaps create incentives for peace between long-time adversaries in West Asia. To take a closer look at these potential developments, stay with us on this edition of Iran Today. A few months ago, a pair of trucks from the northernmost United Arab Emirates Princeton of Ras Al Khaimah made their way south to the port at Sharjah. The drivers eased them onto a specialized roll-on, roll-off ferry that crossed the Persian Gulf to the Iranian port of Bandar Abbas, where they disembarked at the Shahid Bahonar terminal and made a beeline for Iran's fine multi-lane highways. They headed northwest across Iran to the mountainous frontier with Turkey. Then, upon crossing the Bazargan border, the drivers headed southwest to the Turkish Mediterranean seaport of Mersin. Thus, a new trade route was established, one that regional actors are jumping on and could build the kind of trade ties that encourage peaceful relations in West Asia.
Nowadays, the West Asia region, and especially Iran's geography, is approximately located at the crossing of north-south and east-west junctions of the world, and is considered as the connecting point of the three continents of Asia, Africa, and Europe. This very attribute has given Iran's geography a unique political characteristic, as well as the identity, capacity, and the opportunity of geo-economic character. So if this is used properly, it can bring Iran great economic security and political outcomes.
International experts indicate that the Iran route makes a lot of sense. In all, the trip from the UAE to the Mediterranean takes a mere 6 days, according to the World Road Transport Organization, IRU. That's a fraction of the 21 days or so it would take to get a shipment from the Persian Gulf to the Red Sea through the bottleneck at the Suez Canal and into the Mediterranean Sea.
In terms of infrastructure, we have a high capacity and high quality infrastructure. I mean, Iran's transit network connecting surrounding geography and civilizations to other parts of the world. I believe that our transit routes are of high quality and volume. For instance, wherever there is a shortage of railways, there are definitely high-capacity roads. Or wherever there is a need for waterways entrance, definitely we have high-capacity ports, be it either the northern shores of Caspian Sea or in the southern shores of the Persian Gulf and the Sea of Oman.
Lawyers who specialize in international sanctions and trade law have commented that at the moment, the biggest historical abnormality is the absence of Iran from the global trading system. The development of this transit corridor makes a lot of sense historically and geographically, in that Iran would play this significant role.
You know that right now we have 12,000 kilometers of railway in the country and 6,000 kilometers of road networks. Of course, this is a huge network. 50-60% of our roads and the majority of our railways have transit capabilities. But to reach the 300 million ton target in the future, in effect, we need to develop our transport networks. I believe we need to act more rapidly in that direction in terms of infrastructure and equipment development.
Since the Iran trade route was opened, roughly 1,000 trucks have made the trip between Turkey and the UAE, mostly carrying goods from west to east, according to numbers provided by the local Turkish officials and media outlets. The products, which are worth millions of dollars in total, include consumer durables, foodstuff, cosmetics, machinery, spare parts, and personal belongings moving back and forth. Apparently, the trips are facilitated by a single set of $30 transit documents issued by the International Road Transport Organization, which are valid in dozens of Eurasian nations.
The current changing international environment has impacted the major international transit corridors or China's Belt and Road Project, either in energy or cargo fields, in a way that they have to depend on this critical strategic region. With the start of the Ukraine war and the challenges in South Caucasus from 2020 onwards, Iran's position has become very important due to the strategic security that its geography offers.
Based on the studies we've done, the crossing of any kind of transit commodity through roads creates about $150 of revenue for us, directly and indirectly, meaning that it creates some revenues for the public sector and some for the private sector. It has benefits for the people of the regions that the transit commodity passes through. But in my opinion, aside from the mentioned value, the overall benefits of tying up business and economy to the geography of Iran in the mode of transit is priceless. And however much the interdependencies of regional and international merchants with Iran increases, we can expect our revenues and benefits help us reach our development targets.
Based on media reports, Pakistan is also taking advantage of a newly launched Iranian route to Turkey, which cuts travel times for goods between South Asia and Europe from upwards of 40 days by sea down to as little as a week. Additionally, Central Asian nations, worried about bottlenecks at Caspian Sea ports that have caused weeks of delays, as well as a war raging in Ukraine that has impeded Eurasian traffic, are looking to Iran to get goods back and forth.
The Azerbaijan issue is a different story. As you know, Azerbaijan has a strategic alliance with Turkey. In this alliance, they have attempted to impact the North-South corridor on the western part of our country. We've been witnessing a certain game that they're playing in terms of military and security issues, for instance, utilizing their leverage towards Armenia. Turkey is working a lot on these issues. On one hand, they come to negotiate, and on the other hand, they utilize the Azerbaijan card. They're doing all they can to impact the Astara to Bandar Abbas corridor and prevent it from full implementation. Well, we have other options, such as the routes that go through Armenia to the Caspian Sea. I believe Azerbaijan will eventually make peace with this issue. But for now, they're mostly functioning as a tool for Turkey. Or we can go beyond that and mention the fact that they allowed Israeli bases into their soil, trying to scare investors from investing in Iran. But the Islamic Republic can naturally do its own countermeasures in order to protect its national interests.
Commercially, the use of Yuan as a land route makes complete sense. A global container shortage has upped the cost of sea freight, and the threat of piracy or terrorism at sea has jacked up insurance rates. A land option roughly coinciding with the ancient Silk Road connecting Asia to Europe reduces transit times, lowers insurance and refrigeration costs, eases other transport bottlenecks, and could alleviate supply chain shortages, benefiting businesses and consumers worldwide.
We have an extensive cooperation with Azerbaijan Republic. We share east-west and also the north-south transit corridors, meaning that the western route of the north-south through Caspian Sea is shared with Azerbaijan. Also, the connection of Nakhchivan and mainland Azerbaijan is through the Iranian territory. So, we have common benefits in the mentioned corridors. But we also have competition in certain aspects, especially in the route that crosses the Caspian Sea. I don't call it anything but competition. We are competing on alternative routes.
Other land options are less feasible. Currently, Iraq bars transit transportation within its borders and huge areas of Syria remain unstable and in a state of armed conflict. That leaves Iran without any feasible competition.
The fact that other countries are trying to reduce our share of transit is just competition. There's a political dimension and an economic one in it. If we want to analyze the competitive aspect, we have the natural advantage. But if we want to advance our competitive advantage in terms of higher volumes and reaching our goals, we need to develop our infrastructure and the related management systems. And for this development, we need investments.
This is Iran Today. Iran Today is broadcast every week on Fridays and Saturdays. The series analyzes major political, economic, cultural, and social events concerning Iran. So don't miss the opportunity to listen to Iran Today on IRIB English Radio.
Further economic integration with Iran, while a boost for business, will likely neutralize ongoing attempts by the United States to keep the Islamic Republic isolated. However, there is evidence that at least in this case, regional nations are choosing to ignore American preferences. Having said that, Iranian transport officials say that there are still many kinks to iron out. There is plenty more right after a quick diversion into world media. Here is how it looks on the page. Tehran Times reads, oil ship affiliated with Israeli billionaire hit by drone off Oman coast. Under the condition of anonymity, a West Asian defense official told the Associated Press that a drone carrying a bomb had attacked the oil ship Tuesday night off the coast of Oman. The official recognized the ship as Pacific Zircon, as an oil tanker owned by Eastern Pacific Shipping, bearing the Liberian flag. The Singapore-based corporation is owned by Israeli billionaire Eden Ofer. A commercial vessel was involved in an incident in the Gulf of Oman, the Fifth Fleet of the U.S. Navy informed Reuters. The attack has not yet been attributed to anyone. The Geopolitics asks, can Iran counter its rivals in Central Asia through a connectivity push? Iran has rapidly emerged as a major transport hub. Iran's strategic location as a connecting link between West Asia and South Asia gives its distinct leverage. Iran is trying to bank on this advantage and push for greater engagements with Central Asia.
Iran lacks economic heft of its rivals. However, connectivity initiatives may give Iran an edge over its rivals in Central Asia. With transit routes and supply lines disrupted due to the Russia-Ukraine war, Iran's position as a connectivity point to South Asia, Middle East, Africa, and Southeast Asia could be a pivot with the landlocked Central Asian countries. The global economic power center shifting to Asia, Iran offers an attractive outreach to the Central Asian countries, to South Asia, particularly to India. With Russia's eroding influence, Central Asian countries would seek to diversify their external engagements. Iran's proposition as a gateway to South and Southeast Asia could lead to Central Asian countries strengthening their ties with Iran. Iran's role in trade and transit has increased considerably over recent years. In 2021, the country's overall transit traffic rose by 68%, while transit traffic by road doubled. Transit is forecasted to grow by another 25% by the end of 2022.
Today, the economy is the top issue. If you can provide a secure, short, and economic route for your neighbors, either the immediate neighbors or beyond them, they will definitely choose your lands to cross. This will bring you the opportunity that other countries' economies will be tied up and dependent on yours. And as a result, you are no longer alone on the international stage.
In light of Iran's growing role in regional trade, the International Road Transport Union, IRU, and Iran's private and public sectors have held high-level talks recently on avenues for further expansion. IRU Secretary General Umberto de Preto traveled to Iran a few months back to discuss how the country can continue along this positive trade and transit trajectory. He held a series of high-level talks, including meetings with the Ministry of Roads and Urban Development, the Ministry of Foreign Affairs, Customs Authorities, and IRU member, Iran Chamber of Commerce, Industries, Mines, and Agriculture. The authorities and IRU expressed their satisfaction with how they have cooperated and successfully implemented joint projects to further improve east-west and north-south corridors crossing Iran. IRU Secretary General Umberto de Preto said, "The growth of Iran's transport sector in recent years has been impressive, making it the number one issuer of TIR carnets in 2021. The TIR carnet allows road transport of goods in transit between member countries of the TIR Convention. It facilitates the circulation of goods under duties and taxes suspension by simplifying the customs procedures."
The Chabahar part of the North-South corridor is very critical and very strategic to the point that Central Asian countries are very insistent about it. Incidentally, the president of Kazakhstan in his recent meeting with President Raisi repeatedly inquired about the development of the Sarakhs-Chabahar railway project because Central Asia needs to have access to the warm waters of the Indian Ocean.
IRU Secretary General also stated that Turkmenistan's recent opening of its borders will now connect China to Turkey and Europe via Iran, making the southern corridor a viable alternative to the northern one.
In my opinion, the China Beltway is a plan that seeks to intertwine China's development to other countries' development beyond its western borders, meaning that it will push business, economic, and maybe even security borders of China towards the west. Accordingly, however much we can interconnect our own development with China's, I believe our role in Beltway plan increases. I mean, we should make the grounds for cooperation in a way that Iran's development become linked with China's. Experience shows that China, especially in the Beltway innovation, has gone to places that environmental challenges are at the lowest. I think we can define a very good cooperation with China, although in terms of Belt and Road Initiative, the defined routes have always included Iran. In light of that, we can say we've been able to get a share of the east-west transit corridors.
IRU officials and Iranian public and private actors also emphasized the benefits of using digital trade tools such as those with the TIR system and the CMR Convention.
The CMR Convention is a United Nations convention that relates to various legal issues concerning